Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Bang on time. Good to see a full house. On what for the students among you is the first proper day of term. My name is Professor Gareth Jones. I'm the director of the Latin America and Caribbean Centre at the LSE, which the previous director initiated about 2 years ago, precisely to engage the LSE academically through the student body, the Alumni Association, and our other friends toward the region. And for the region, its politicians, its business leaders, civil society, and others to engage with the heart of the LSE as well. So to build up that dialogue and increase our conversation. In a moment, I will pass over to the main event, but for those of you who are students or others and interested in engaging further with the LSE and the Centre, just to bit of pre-publicity this, it's an advert before the main programme. We will be holding a joint conference, the first annual conference between the LSE and the Inter-American Development Bank on the topic of skills for development next week, October the 4th. Details available at through the LSE website, but specifically through the Latin America Centre webpage and other social media forms of media I barely understand. Just to note that the event itself is being held in the somewhat cooler surroundings, in both senses of the word, at the Law Society on Chancery Lane next Wednesday week on October the 4th. Without further ado, this event is actually initiated and co-hosted by the LSE Brazilian Society, and so I will pass over to Maria to do the initial introductions. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I really would like to welcome you all here. This is a new year at LSE. I was a student last year, so I'll be passing around for the next president of the Brazilian Society. So, in the name of the LSE Brazilian Society, I really like to thank you all for being here. It is a great honor for us students here at LSE to have a lecture hosted by the Brazilian Minister of Finance, Mr. Henrique Meirelles. This is a unique opportunity for us to discuss the future of Brazil between an exchange of ideas between new generations of us, such as us, with the real policymakers, which is what we all learn here at LSE. And thank you, Minister, for accepting our invitation. I also would like to thank you, the Latin American Caribbean Center, for organizing this event with us. And also thanks to the Brazilian Embassy, which is always helping us, and the ambassador who is here today. And finally, thanks to Professor Paniza, who has been sharing many events with us. And at the end, I'm really happy to have you all. You are all welcome to join Brazilian Society this year, 2018. You can do it on the LSE Student Union. So for us to keep going with the events and providing more and more exchange of ideas. Thank you. Now I will pass the word for Professor Paniza, who will be the chair of the lecture and will be giving the introductory content of this event today. Thank you all.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Francisco Paniza. I'm professor of Latin American and Comparative Studies at the London School of Economics in the Department of Government. A couple of brief housekeeping notes. First, please put your telephones on silent. Minister, this applies to you as well. second, this event is being recorded. Third, at the end of the minister presentation, there'll be time for questions. Please keep your question brief and to the point, not to make general statements. We'll give priority to the questions to the students at the LSE, and at the end of the round of questions, we'll open it to the press. I think that's all I need. Yes, a last thing, when the event is finished, please remain seated until the minister and the ambassadors leave the room. So it's now my pleasure and my privilege to introduce our guest speaker today, Minister Enrique de Campos Meireles. Minister Meireles has a long and distinguished career both in the public and in the private sector. In the public sector, he was appointed Minister of Finance of Brazil in May the 12th, 2016 by President Michel Temer. Minister Meireles also served as President of the Central Bank of Brazil from 2003 to 2010 during the presidency of Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. And in 2002, he was elected as Congressman in Brazil representing the state of Goiás. As I said, Minister Meireles combined his public life with a very long and distinguished career in the private sector, just to name some of his positions. He was president of Bank of Boston Corporation, who he joined in 1974, chairman of Lazard American, chairman of the advisory board of Bedrock, member of the Council of Lloyd's of London, and member of the board of directors of Azul Linhas Aéreas Brasileiras. Mr. Meireles was also member of the advisory board of the Harvard Kennedy School of Government, of the Sloan School of Management at MIT, and at the Carroll School of Management at Boston College. Mr. Meireles was also the head of the Asociación Viva o Centro, an NGO he founded in the 1990s for the revitalization of the downtown area of São Paulo. Mr. Meireles holds a bachelor's degree in engineering from the University of São Paulo and a master of business administration from the Federal University of Rio de Janeiro. Minister Meireles, it's my pleasure to invite you to address the audience.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here and have the opportunity to exchange ideas with you about what is happening, what's taking place in Brazil, the profound reforms the Brazilian economy is going through now, and the results which are already bearing fruit, and what is coming next. I would like first to thank you all, thank the professor, thank the school for the invitation and for this opportunity. It is really a pleasure for me to be here discussing with you and taking a different view or discussing about probably different approaches than normally one would have with investors or business and so on and so forth. But let's then move on, and the question is where next for the Brazilian economy. In order to do that, let's go back. Let's see what has happened in Brazil during the last decades. But the important question now is that we are coming out of our worst recession in the Brazilian history since Brazilian GDP began to be measured in 1901. As you can see, the contraction of the GDP of 7.3% from the level of 2014 exceeds those of the recessions of 29, 30, 31, 32, 33 combined, which was minus 5.3%, the one from 1980 until 83, 6.3, and the one from 89 to 1992, which was 3.4%. In summary, that recession was one which is the longest and deepest in the Brazilian history. The key question for us was to provide a correct analysis of what the reasons were and to take the measures to face that. First, if we think about short term, the macroeconomic policy framework for Brazil had grown during the last years with a consumption fueled by credit. Credit subsidies, public banks expanding their portfolio and going after customers, sometimes with lower rates. In summary, there was a very, very well-focused growth based on consumption. The idea which was behind this is that if you grow the demand, if you have the demand growing with all kind of subsidies, etc., and credit subsidies, the companies will react and the supply side of the economy will react well. The problem was that was also coupled with a fiscal expansion as a result of the tax waivers for industry, which were substantial. Then we had a deterioration of the public finances. The deficit, the primary deficit began to grow. And as a result, the rate of growth of the total public debt increased in the projections, increased substantially the percentage of the total public debt over GDP. That led to market rates increasing, reflecting higher risk premium as a result of uncertainty which began to be developed about the future sustainability of the public debt. Particularly, market rate then went up, risk perception increased. And together with all of that, the government also had a state intervention mind. Then there were some price intervention. Some prices were controlled. Electricity, gas, and several other price distortions occurred in the economy. All of that led to a drop of the level of confidence of business and consumers, and reached historical lows. Investors' confidence went down, and the investors' investment also went down. At the same time, inflation went up, even when central bank increased rates eventually, but the inflation expectation was already too high and on the way up. Unemployment began to rise in 2015. Households' confidence went down, and as a result, private consumption also slowed down. In summary, the whole idea, which was based on private consumption driving at the end of the day growth, that actually failed because private consumption, as a result of this macroeconomic scenario, also slowed down. Eventually, that was coupled also with some political uncertainty, as we know. The point I would like to mention is even all of that really did aggravate the situation, the roots of the structural problems date from much longer time. Let's see that. Let's analyze here the central government primary expenses as a percentage of GDP. And you have that since 1991 until 2016. And the red bar shows the last year of every administration, even when the same president was reelected. And then we can see how it began to evolve since 1991, when it was below 11% of the GDP total federal primary expenses, and then went up. And if you take the red bar, the last year of each administration, you can see that it keeps continuously going up, every administration. Eventually, It came to a number in 2016 of almost 20% of GDP, coming up from a little bit over 10. If we compare with the GDP growth, we see here that the primary expenses from 2007 to 2016 increased by 55.6%, and the GDP by 14.9%. In summary, primary expenses grew as a percentage of the GDP, obviously as a result of the fact that it was growing at a higher rate than GDP. All of that led to all those consequences that I described to you, and I would simply go back now to the GDP numbers. You can see that we had grew at reasonable rates for Brazil, actually higher than historical average from 2006 until 2008. 2009 was a recession year, almost break even as a result of the crisis, the credit crisis initiated in the US, but 2010 was a strong recovery year. And that is the growth here, the average growth for the period was above historical average. That you, I will show to you, that's higher than, that's lower than that. But it's during the last 25 years was a little bit over 3%, the average. But then we had this very strong growth in 2010, which was a recovery from 2009, and evidently there was here output gap, which was filled, and then the growth naturally was higher, but then it began to decline as a result of all these factors that I described. We reached 2014 with only 0.5% growth, and then recession in 2015, 3.8%, and 3.6 in 2016. Then we had this bottom line, I'll say, as a result of all this evolution. What was the response? And now we come to basically what is being done in the country. First, a set of a group of structural reforms, which are, number one, establishing a rule for the growth of federal expenses. It was established a ceiling, which is based on the inflation of the past year, and that is valid for 10 years. Then for 10 years, we'll have a ceiling for the growth of federal expenses in the country. That's written in the Constitution. That was a constitutional amendment approved by Congress, which is two rounds at the House, two rounds at the Senate. And it demands 3/5 of the vote. Then it was a strong move, a strong vote, actually. It was approved with good margin. And then this is already part of our Constitution, and had a tremendous impact on the level of confidence. I will show you that. The second important reform here was the labor reform. This is already approved. I will address that in a minute. And that's already in place, and this is already also being implemented, and the results are also extremely positive. Social Security, that's underway. I will address that. It's going to be voted by Congress. It was approved by a special commission at the House, formed by that with some modifications, but now it's going to the full House. And our expectation is that's going to be voted by late October, early November. That's also the expectation of some of the leaders of the House. And then it would go to the Senate. But there are questions. Several analysts question whether that would indeed have time to be voted now with several other questions taking place. As you know, there was an accusation presented against the president in the first place that was basically denied by the House. It was not accepted. Then there is a second one now which has to be voted, and that is going to be voted before the Social Security, as I think is natural. That has to be decided, and then we go to Social Security. Task reform, that is underway. We are in the process of preparing a proposal together with congressmen, with business, with academics. We are discussing that, specialists, etc., technicians in the government. That's a very wide group of discussion. We are moving forward. And we have the microeconomic reforms. The first group is efficiency. We are looking for increasing the productivity rate of the Brazilian economy. That's a very, very important fact. The idea is not only to grow, but grow at higher rates. Well, I'll get to that. Fiscal adjustment, which is what I described, basically the ceiling rule, the Social Security reform, and several other measures. That's the fiscal adjustment, and measures to improve and increase the efficiency of the credit market. Let's start now with the effects of the effect of the ceiling. If you take now the central government primary expenditure, another way of seeing what I showed to you before, as you see, in 1991, the total primary expenditure was 10.8% of the GDP. That came to 19.9% in 2016. If the trend were kept, nothing were done, we would go to 25.4, around that, in 2026. Could be a little bit over, more or less, depending on the GDP growth rate. But that's a good number. With the ceiling, rather than that, it would go to 15.5. That is a tremendous difference, because that represents, evidently, more money, more resources left for growth, for investment, for consumption, etc., etc., etc. And I will address that question also in a minute. Second one, labor reform. The idea is to allow for outsourcing, that to have the negotiated agreement prevailing over the legislative one. Because what happened today, if you have employees and employers of some sector agreeing on something, that could be overruled by a judge. Then, actually, the justice decides exactly how it works, and that, at the end of the day, creates a cumbersome, complicated environment for labor relations. The idea is to have more flexibility regarding working hours and reducing the labor wedge, which, according to estimates, could lead to a creation of more 6 million jobs. If you take the situation presently of 100 reais, which is spent by the company, at the end of the day, the equivalent salary, the employee value, is about 63.5-ish. And the labor wedge is about 36.5. Tax, income tax, contributions to some systems like this S system, which is a system run by business unions and etc. It's, you know, it's not the union. It's important that you get that right. It's not a employees or workers union. It's a businessman union. That's a peculiarity of the Brazilian law. The business unions, which are created together with the workers' union in the past, a few decades ago in Brazil, they run a system in which there are mandatory contributions made by companies, which at the end of the day is like tax, but it's spent under the direction of those business federations, associations. They add value to the society. They render several services and goods and etc. They have several systems. They teach employees. There are several good things, but bottom line is that at the end of the day, that's a wedge in the salary. And other things, management costs, etc., etc., etc. The idea is that that would lower the labor reform, the labor wedge, creating more jobs and eventually leading to a higher employee value, a higher salary, net salary for the employees. Now, Social Security. That's an important question in Brazil. I will show here and call your attention for something which is very interesting. Here is the total Social Security expenses as a percent of GDP. You see here Brazil, about 13%. Total expenses as a percent of GDP. Here is the dependency ratio, which is the population aged 55 years of age or over the ones below 25. If you take Japan, those aged 65 or more are almost 50% of the ones aged 20 to 64. It's an older, more mature population. Brazil is the youngest population still. But in spite of that, the total Social Security expenses as a percentage of the GDP in Brazil is higher than in Japan. And that's a problem, because evidently, when you grow in the dependency ratio, the line goes up. And that, according to calculations, that will demand larger and larger portions of the budget and larger contributions. The other graph shows as a percent of the GDP, Social Security benefit as a percent of the GDP, 3.3%. In 2016, 8.1%. With this projection, it would go in a little bit over 30 years, it would go to 40 years, it would go to 17.2%. But even in 10 years, the growth is substantial. And then the curve gets steeper. The reason for that is that Brazilians still are retiring at somewhat young age if you compare the life expectancy with the retirement average age. The difference in Brazil is more substantial than in other countries, and it's increasing. And more than that, there is the fact that in Brazil there are some special groups which have much more higher pensions than other sectors. A private sector person has a limit which is very strict in terms of maximum pension. Civil servant basically gets much higher percentage of the salary, and normally retires much younger. The idea of the system is to make everyone equal. And evidently, every sector, civil servants, private employees of private companies, can have their own pension fund, make special contribution, and get extra pension. No problem with that. That some areas, this already work very well, but the other problem is the public Social Security. In summary, that's a discussion. Let's see what's going to happen. Evidently, this is going to be a very, very interesting discussion at the Congress. and we'll see what the decision is going to be. Other measures, the BNDES is the Brazilian National Development Bank. And the idea is, it was approved, the law, the idea was to replace the rate used for the bank's loans. It was called before TJLP. TLP is long-term rate, basically. And the other one was the same. But the one which prevailed so far, it was much below market. And this idea is to have the bank lending at market rates which are closer to market interest rates. The idea is to reduce the implicit subsidy, which is financed by Treasury, and reduce the dependence of business sector, some business sector, of subsidized long-term lending. But there are several other consequences here. One of them is the power of monetary policy of central bank, because the way it works today, it worked so far before this, or until today, because this new rate will enter into place only in January of 18. When central bank increases or decreases the base rate, that doesn't affect a good portion of the lending rate for corporations, because this rate is set on an administrative basis by the government. Then central bank is controlling monetary policy, but this does not affect the market and the credit market. With all the market unified with the same rate and central bank having an influence in all the market, practically with some few exceptions, as in every country, the power of the monetary policy increases substantially. This is one, maybe the most important reason why interest rate in Brazil is so high. Because if you have subsidized rate here in a large portion of the market, and the central bank controls demand, the aggregate demand, only with a part of the credit market, then it has, when it has to increase the rates in order to control inflation, has to increase much more in order to compensate and average out. Now, things are moving to the right direction, and together with all the other measures that we are taking, the fiscal consolidation, etc., and all the other measures, the bottom line, I'll show to you, that is that interest rates have fallen in a very impressive way. Not only the nominal, but the real one. And as opposed to what has happened in the past, inflation did not go up, went down. We'll talk about that in a minute. Then, tax reform, which is coming. We are discussing that, as I mentioned. There is a new public finance law. This is basically creating a system for the making of the budget, creating responsibility for the ones who are responsible for implementing and proposing and developing the budget, in the sense that this is a complement, an addition to the fiscal responsibility law, which works well, which was approved several years ago. There is an ongoing effort in order to solve the state's debt problem. Some of you are aware of that, a big crisis in Rio. What is more, is better known, is evidently the violence, the problems, the shooting, etc., which is taking place in Rio for a variety of reasons. But there is one component of that, which is the fact that the state of Rio is in a financial crisis, a serious one. That's not the only factor, but that's an important factor, because that affects the capacity of the state to run an efficient police, to pay well, to train, and at some times to pay salaries on time. And then it's very important to have the state finances also organized and working well. It was approved a law called Fiscal Responsibility Law, and that enabled State of Rio to present what's called a Fiscal Responsibility Recovery Plan, and that was approved by Finance Ministry and by the President. As a result of that, Rio is implementing that plan, which would enable the state to basically balance its budget in for the first year. The plan is for 3 years. It could be renewed for more, three. The idea is by the end of this period, the state is, again, balanced and working without any need for this kind of adjustment. The plan is very simple. There are some expense reductions, increasing of revenues, cutting of subsidies, etc., for corporations, a series of measures, increasing some the contribution for civil servants, etc., and privatization of state-owned companies. That's an important point. And also a moratorium on the state's debt with the federal government and other debts. In summary, it's an effort to have the states working. In Rio is already there, has already signed that agreement. It's implementing. It's the one which was obviously in the worst situation. There is a second state now, beginning conversations with the state of Rio Grande do Sul, and there are others which are analyzing the situation. The other point is the World Bank ranking for the quality of the countries. They call the business environment, but I like to call the capacity for the countries to produce, how the productivity rate at the end of the day in the country. They call it easy of doing business in a country, which basically has a very long list of questions. I will give you two examples for you to have a clear idea about that. It's a long list, but let me give you two. Today, if you want to open a company in São Paulo, new company, only filling papers. You go, some of you are Brazilians, or some of you may want to move to Brazil, go to São Paulo, and you decide to open and have a startup. Maybe most of you are thinking about something like that. You go to São Paulo, it's a good market, growing. First thing you get there, you have to open a company. You have to go to the paper, the registry, and get the paperwork ready. That will take you, average, World Bank measure, 101 days. It's not to open the office or to build the plant, filling papers, getting documents. The idea is to reduce that time. First period, first step, 10 days, 101 to 10, then 5, then 3. The idea is to have, by the end of next year, something like 5 days, and a little bit more would get to 3 days, which is a good international average. Today, one would spend, one average company spend 2,600 hours to pay taxes in Brazil every year. The annual time is spent for corporations paying tax, again, it's not working to generate the money to pay tax. No, it's paper. Filling paper, 2,600 hours per year, every company. The idea is to bring that number down by 75 to 80% in the first. We are working on that. It's been very successful, two efforts so far. São Paulo is already showing some very good results, and other cities will follow soon. To give you another idea, if one company is going to export, the idea is to decrease by 60% the amount of time spent again in papers, in the ports, customs, etc., etc. In summary, the idea is to make the whole country more effective, more productive, companies being able to focus on what matters, not in bureaucracy. That is moving on very, very, very good. And the idea is that Brazil should go up in that World Bank's ranking. Today is not well placed. The idea is that it's going to move up substantially according to our estimates. We reached an agreement with the World Bank about 1 year ago, and the World Bank, our World Bank technical group, went to Brasilia. We are working together, Finance Ministry and World Bank. We are working together in every one of these measures based on the World Bank experience all over the world. It's a very, very interesting and well-measured effort. Modernize the regulations on several sectors of the economy, like oil and gas, for instance. The idea was to free Petrobras for having the obligation to invest in every new field, either it's founded, the company found it attractive or not. It had to, by law. That was over. Petrobras can choose now where to invest, etc., etc., etc. And that goes on. There is a new law for the governance of state-owned companies, for instance. Very good law, very strong. It demands professional experience. That's a gradual process in the moment that management and the board of these companies are being changed. There is a replacement, which is gradual, which goes over time. The newcomers, the new managers, the new directors must have professional experience, knowledge of that field. It's a very, very serious and strong law. And Brazil is also applying to become a permanent member of the OECD. What is the advantage here? Several, some of them, the fact that Brazil would be able to modernize its regulations in several sectors, working together with those several groups of the OECD. Probably that would lead to an increase in the credit rating of the country, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, what's happening? Inflation now. The black line is the headline inflation. You can see that by the end of 2015, beginning of 16, it peaked at two-digit level. And then after that, a combination of fiscal consolidation, clear directions, and expectations improving, and a clear and very, very well communicated monetary policy applied by the central bank, you can clearly see that inflation has come down strongly. Inflation now, for the last 12 months, is about 2.5% in Brazil, below target. Target 4.5, 2% below target. Central banks released today the market expectation, the analysts, etc., is a very spread, there's a very large pool of opinions gathered by central bank economists from several areas of the economy, schools, academia, federations, companies, banks, wherever. And this number is very interesting because it shows an inflation actually below target for this year and next, actually, and even 2018, even with central bank cutting the rate substantially to record lows. Even with that, inflation expectation comes down. It's new in Brazil. It's very, very, very important. But the numbers are here. In the blue line, you can see the core inflation. If you take food and managed price. somewhat equivalent to the U.S., but not precisely equivalent to the core inflation. There's food and oil. Here's food and managed prices, one of the core inflation measures. There are others. There are several measures of core inflation. This is the average, the blue line. Now the central bank base rate. You can clearly see what I mentioned is coming down fast. That's on the left vertical slide. That's central bank base rate, how it was right here, and now it is right here. The market is already projecting lower rates with inflation below target, which is very new. The blue line is a bank lending rates, which are very high in Brazil, but again, it's coming down and has gone up during the last years. When it was a very interesting phenomenon in Brazil. You had the crisis, and during the crisis, when the crisis was getting worse, you had at the same time in Brazil. You see, you can put that the ones who work a little bit more, study a little bit more. No, it doesn't need to be that deep the study, but if you think about monetary policy, you had in Brazil a situation in which there was deep recession, deepest ever, high unemployment, which means tremendous output gap, idle capacity in companies. Inflation was high, interest rate was very high, at the same time. That's not normal, to say the least. What happened? What's happening is what I call Brazilian economy coming to normal. What I mean, we still have an output gap. It's now beginning to close, but still there. We still have high unemployment coming down, but still high. Oh, inflation should come down very fast. It did. Even, and then central bank can lower rates, as it should. Summary, things began to work well in the economy. Transmission mechanisms are already on the way of working better and better and better. Now, confidence, I mentioned that. The industrial confidence index, how it worked, you can see here in 2008-9, it went down, the credit crisis in the U.S., and then up. But then began to come down steadily. Until August 15, it was the bottom, and then it began to go up, and now it's on the way up again. The consumer confidence index, same thing. Ups and downs, we can see it's not never a straight line, as we know, but the trend is up. Unemployment rate, a very important one, because unemployment reacts with a gap. Summary, if you take a look, for instance, here, in 2014, unemployment rate was still very low, below the historical average in Brazil. Recession had already hit. GDP was already contracting. I'll show you that. But unemployment was still very low because it takes time for the employment rate to react. It takes time for companies to dismiss. It takes time for the companies to hire. And eventually, that's already taking place in Brazil in the sense that the recovery is leading already to a drop in the unemployment rate. Approximately 1 million new jobs were created in Brazil in the first 7 months of the year. And that is picking up. Summary, definitely we are moving towards that direction. Now, I told you that I show you that let's have here a different measure. Because when you have a very deep recession and then a recovery, obviously the statistical carryover becomes extremely negative, And it's difficult to analyze simply by the average the GDP growth rate. Then what we are doing here is comparing one quarter with the same quarter of the previous year. For instance, we have still some not revised estimates. This is the estimate that we have for some time already, which is 0.5% for the year. Market's already expecting 0.7 for this year, but the marginal rate's much higher. If we compare the expectation for the fourth quarter of 17 over the fourth quarter of 16, is 2.7%. This number. And if we compare the fourth quarter of 17 over the third quarter, annualized 3.2%. And if you see here the GDP numbers, that becomes very clear why. It comes down and then it's moving up at somewhat a steep curve. Again, the decline was also steep, but then it's coming up. And what that tells us is that the growth for 2018, considering that then the statistical carryover would work the other way, is going to be substantially higher. Market's already expecting 3% or so. We have still in the budget 2%. But as I am saying now, with a bias towards increasing the expectation. And then the market's already at 3.7 and 2.7 for 2018. But some houses, some economists are already expecting that to be around 3%, which is a very interesting recovery. But let's talk now about longer term. The idea here is the GDP. What I'm showing here is the GDP per capita in logarithmic terms, in real terms, logarithmic scale. You can see here how it evolves. If we take the per capita number from 1915 until 1980, it was 3.8%, very high growth for the good portion of the last century. Then it fell from 1980 until 2015 to 1.3. That's per capita. If we now look at the projection for the next 10 years, I have here three scenarios. A pessimistic one, with no reforms, a reform, and the full range of reforms, which I call the optimistic one. Everything working the best it could. Population, obviously, is increasing at a lower percentage rate now compared to before, going to the left, from 1915 to 1980, 2.3% population growth every year, very high. Then it came down from 80 to 2015 to 1.5. Expectation now for the next 10 years, about 0.6%. The demography, then fertility rate, everything is coming down, as in many other countries. If we go now to simplify the GDP, straightforward GDP to the right column, we can see that the pessimistic one is a 2% average growth for the next 10 years. With the reforms, 3.7. An optimistic one could go to more than 4%, which is a very, very high rate for the country, which that is with all the, not only the fiscal, the macroeconomic reform, but all the microeconomic reform, the productivity increase moves, every change that is being worked on in every sector. And that could take place somewhat fast with all the measures being addressed now and reform being voted. This could happen by the end of next year. We could have these projections moving forward. In summary, Brazil is coming out of the worst economic recession in its history, as I said. We understand, and it's a fact that Brazil, many Brazilians need a stronger and functioning social safety net. Indeed, yes, absolutely. But by restoring the fiscal sustainability of the state, the reforms would allow future governments to divert more resources to socially relevant areas. In the fiscal and the ceiling of increase in federal expenses, we kept the projected numbers and the floor for expenses in education and in health. Those areas were basically preserved in terms of having some basis for growth. The idea of the budget, what it has today, the constitution, that there is a limit for total expenses, but in expenses and investment in education, for instance, there is a floor. There is no ceiling, but there is a floor as a percentage of the total tax revenues. In summary, that's the same for health. The idea is then to have the basis for a more just and prosperous Brazil. And the final message is that this is not a particular government agenda. This is an agenda for the next generations. And that's the reason why this is being approved, regardless of all the political discussions in Brazil, because that's an agenda for the future. For instance, the labor reform was approved by the end of last semester. A very difficult political time in Brazil, the labor reform was approved by Congress, two houses, very important. And for instance, the new interest rate, which took the new interest rate used by the development bank, which took subsidies out of powerful corporations, who are basically the largest in who are the borrowers of the development bank. That was done, and now the credit is much more rational for everyone, enabling credit rates to fall for everyone in the country, not only customers of a bank, which is very important, very useful, and is going to play an important role for the future. But again, borrowing in the market and lending at lower spreads, but basically having the same funding rate as Treasury to avoid the subsidies here. That's the point. And that is bringing the rates down for everyone, including Treasury, substantially. That's helping a lot. In summary, this is basically what I would like to say, and now we could go to the most important part, which is questions, answers, opinions, statements, whatever, please.
Thank you very much, Minister. In spite of what the minister said, let's stick to question, not opinion and statement. We don't just to check, we have about 20 minutes. I will give priority to members of the public, that is LSE students and other guests here. And in the last 10 or 5 minutes, I will open to the press. So please, the press, don't make the first round of questions. You raise your hand first. Is there a microphone somewhere? Yeah, bring the
microphone. Microphone will help there. Yeah.
Without microphone?
If you bring the microphone. Yeah, bring the microphone there. Just identify yourself and make a short question, please.
Thank you. I'm Vitor Kneip. I am a student of MBA in Oxford. So first, ministro, muito obrigado por estar aqui, é prazer. É orgulho muito grande tê-lo como ministro no país. I'd like to pose a question regarding peer-to-peer lending platforms. They are under consultation of a central bank. And you said mentioned about credit and about the competitiveness report, the ranking. And credit is for entrepreneur like me. I have a bank in Complexo do Maré in Rio. This is quite important. So what is the role you see, sir, for peer-to-peer lending platforms in unlocking credit for in the market? You want me to repeat? Sorry.
Yeah, it sounded pretty loud.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, that's much better.
Yeah. What is the role you see, sir, for peer-to-peer lending platforms, which are basically electronic platforms where lenders and borrowers discuss the conditions instead of a loan agreement?
Yeah.
Which is the role of these platforms, in your opinion, to unlock credit in our country? Thank you. I'm sorry.
Well, the idea is to have then a platform for borrowing and lending, etc. I think that there is a role because evidently that's a trend. As much technology is used to make the market more efficient, etc., the better. There are several fintech companies in Brazil already working in several areas. And I think definitely there is a position, evidently, as in every country, central banks have to think how to address and make sure that the depositors don't work without any kind of rule to protect and have some level of confidence in the markets and so on and so forth. But having said that, I think that it's favorable. I think that's the way to go. I mean, I'm not talking only about this. More and more, I think that all these electronic and the digital world is going to more and more have an important role in the financial market in general. Not only evidently in credit as well, in terms of facilitating and making them more rational and less costly and enabling it, but also services, payments, as we know, which is happening every country. But again, evidently, central bank would have to find ways of not only providing some level of protection for, at the end of the day, depositors, but also being able to control, to have an idea of control of the money supply, obviously. But in having said that, I think that that's a technical question, which at the end of the day, technological. It can be resolved, and Central Bank of Brazil is working hard on catching up and being able to deal with all the advances in the financial industry as a result of the new technological advances.
The gentleman there at the back on your left, yeah, you, yeah, okay. Speak loud and clear, the sound of the microphone was awful, so I don't know, it's not a big room, so.
Minister Meirelles, my name is Sergio Zucco, I'm a professor at FGV, Conservatory of Bagas in Rio. I have a question about the ceiling for expenditures. Actually, two questions about the same issue. So the first is, our colleagues at IBRI, I'm pretty sure you already heard this, they ran the numbers and they think that in 2 years tops, maybe three, the ceiling as is unapplicable. It's unenforceable. Mm-hmm. We're gonna go through the ceiling, basically. Mm-hmm. And then what? That's the first question. Mm-hmm. Because it might be a big issue, a legal issue. There's lots of liabilities involved in this. Mm-hmm. And the second issue related to the ceiling, most people that have looked at this have agreed that it's a very blunt measure way to do something that most people might agree with, but it's very blunt. And the question I have to the policymakers is, wasn't any more sophisticated mechanisms such as Chile's stabilization fund or other countries that have used more sophisticated, more nuanced
rules for setting the caps and expenditures considered? Was it just because it was politically infeasible? Was it hard to communicate? Why, what was the rationale for such a blunt measure as we have heard?
The first question, I would address other concerns which are being raised, not specifically only this one about how feasible that is over time, and et cetera, et cetera. Evidently, some basic additional reforms have to be implemented in order to make the ceiling effective. And that's what is basically being discussed. But it's very important to analyze that the way it's evolving, it's becoming clearer and clearer that the instrument is a very effective one. Why? Because the problem is all the discussion of, and all the process all over the country and the several demands of several sectors of the society which reflect on the executive or at the Congress or et cetera. All the complexity of rules, of expense allocation, of creation of new expenses, et cetera. It's a very complex array of things. And to try to control that on a more flexible way, the experience in was already a fact. Brazil has tried everything. What I'm saying is that if you look at the curve, what I showed to you here, let's go back to it only to make this fact clear. When we look at this, you can easily imagine that that's not the first time we're discussing this issue. That was already tried different ways many times over the years. Failed, always. Why? Because exactly the way the system works and the demands and all of that, and the fact is that a good portion of that is written in the Constitution. And then you have some very clear constitutional rules, otherwise it doesn't work. Because you have other rules which are written in the Constitution with increased expenses here and there and other laws and et cetera. And then you have for a period, only for a period, you have to have a very clear rule. And that is working because that is what is creating a benchmark, which is already very high. That's the point. It's not that we are putting the ceiling at 10%. Basically, it's already at 20% of the GDP, only federal. Don't forget that Brazil has states and municipalities. And then the total level of expenses in the country as a percentage of the GDP is extremely high by international standards. Then that is the idea and that is how it works. And so far it's working because it's a benchmark, it's a guideline, and then all the other regulations are working. Evidently, if things work extremely well, better than everyone expects, if the GDP grows at much higher rates as a result of all of that in the next many years, that's another story. Let's discuss that has happened. And Brazil has another point. The total tax collection, the gross tax collection in the country in Brazil is the highest in emerging markets. I am not talking about the rising debt. I'm talking only in tax collections. It's very high, the highest in the emerging market, going up. And then some people tell me, well, with that, today there is a very high primary result deficit. But with that, in several years, there will be a substantial primary result surplus. My answer to that's very simple. That's a very good problem for Brazil to have in the future, because amongst other things, we can rationalize the tax system, we can lower the tax burden, because one of the problems of the tax burden in Brazil, as opposed to what one would think here, is that it doesn't tax primarily the higher income level. No. In Brazil, it's regressive. And why? Because you have value-added taxes, etc. That's historical. And then you must have a surplus in order to have a tax reform, which we are already addressing the tax reform to correct many of that. The idea is to make it less, much less regressive. We are working on that. But at the moment, what I'm saying is that the more room you have to maneuver, the more rational the tax can be in terms of promoting growth and not only tax revenues, being conducive to growth, not being as aggressive, and so on and so forth. In summary, to have a much better, more rational, more productive, fairer tax system.
A little bit of gender balance. yes,
Yes, and I wanted to, perhaps my name is Emily, I'm a former MSc alumni and I work with Pathway Civil Society organization based in the UK and we work in Brazil. My question was about poverty and inequality and really the growth at what cost, what are some of the social and environmental impacts, and in relation to the constitutional amendment, why does this cap to public spending apply only to limit public expenditure and running costs?
To what?
Eu posso falar no português, porque é mais fácil para a pergunta. Por que a emenda constitucional do teto dos gastos só serve para as despesas correntes no orçamento pessoal e gastos sociais, deixando fora os juros do pagamento da dívida, que são a segunda maior despesa do orçamento?
Yeah, the basic question is why not to put a ceiling on the payment of interest rate. The reason is very simple. It never worked in any place because you don't control the interest rate in the country. You don't pay what you want to pay. I am a borrower, I am treasury, I am a borrower, and I tell you, good, I am going to pay you an interest rate with half of what you are prepared to lend me, and you will say, no, I'm not going to lend you money. It's as simple as that. We have several countries, we tried that experience. You have flight capital, you have several things, and you have, at the end of the day, financial crisis. And that is a system which has worked in Brazil since the 90s. I'm not talking about the ceiling, etc., but the idea that what the government can control is the primary expenses. That's within the executive and legislative control. The payment on interest comes as a result of that. And as I said, if you look here, what's happening in Brazil, the inflation is coming down and interest rate is coming down strongly, which means that since the cost of treasury is somewhat related, for instance, to the base rate, to some extent, the cost of treasury borrowing. What is happening as a result of all of that is that the cost for treasury funding is also down. Why? Because evidently the rate of the growth of expenses is basically coming down, the rate of growth, and the rising public debt, the path is already being mitigated. The debt will keep rising for a few years, but then it stabilizes and starts to fall as a percent of the GDP. As a result of that, interest rates comes down. Brazil has tried many times to put a ceiling on rates, to control rates, etc. Brazil tried that, for instance, in the 70s, tried again in 1986 with the Cruzado plan, tried again in 1990. That is the most best tested experiment in Brazil, trying to put a ceiling on the interest cost. It has failed every time, has led to inflation, flight capital, and at the end of the day, fiscal crisis. Then the idea is you can't simply say, I am going to spend, I'm going to spend more than I am able to collect and increase more and more and more, but I will borrow more and more and more, and by the way, I will pay less and less interest. Doesn't work. Unless that you try to close the markets, close the capital markets, control the capital. Very few countries still use that. Some of them, some good examples are there. For instance, countries which control the market, not only that market, but you have to control everything. You have to control the press, you have to control goods and services, you have to control everything. And then you control, that doesn't work. That, in summary, and that's, as I said, it was tempted, tried many, many, many times in Brazil. And second, that's an example now of how interest rate is dropping, inflation is falling, everything is working along the lines of one would like.
Okay, the last question for the public, the lady there in black.
Yeah. I'm Daniela Capello, I'm a professor of politics at FGV, and I'm a fellow at Oxford this year. So my question is about the MBS. The vision about the MBS changed tremendously comparing the Cardoso government and the PT government. My question is, what's your vision about the BNDES, for the BNDES, and in particular on the role of the BNDES supporting Brazilian firms' multinationals expanding abroad?
Well, the idea, the question is about the role of the BNDES, how I see it in the future. Well, I see a strong BNDES, number one, efficient, effective, being able to borrow long term, to access market. BNDES already is studying ways to tap the market here and the London market, for instance, in Europe, in other financial center in Brazil, not to be solely, as it was before, dependent on Treasury. Because today, it was a full dependency. Treasury would give BNDES money, BNDES would lend, period. That was it. And all would depend on the amount of subsidies that Treasury was prepared to give to BNDES. For instance, Treasury would borrow at, let's say, a rate and in the market, and then would lend to BNDES at a much lower rate, and BNDES would lend to a company also by a lower rate. And the question is, what company? Then how would you choose the companies would get these subsidies, and that is a huge controversy in Brazil nowadays. As you know, people are looking at the past. And the idea then is to have a strong BNDES being able to go to the market to borrow at rates which are at Treasury number, or who knows, even better, or a little bit higher, whatever, but being able to borrow long-term, lend long-term, and more important, the way rates are going, the idea is that the whole market rate should come down and BNDES would be able to really compete. And the difference would, in my opinion, will be that BNDES will fund projects in the long run, long-term funding for projects which have a kind of maturity that the private banks sometimes are not prepared to take that kind of project. And that is basically the idea. Because today it's strongly limited by the size of the, the deficit, the government deficit, because the subsidy is very strong. For instance, subsidy to BNDES, which means BNDES customers, was in the last 10 years more than 100 billion reais. That reflects on the state debt. That's as simple as that. In summary, the whole idea is to take place, to keep taking place what is already happening. Brazil has to come to a situation in which international interest rates are the ones which prevail in Brazil. We have to eliminate these distortions, which look good for some companies or people, but at the end of the day, distort the credit market, and you have a very high interest rate for everyone else. And that's the problem. If you are not one specific borrower for a specific type of subsidized loan and you went to the market, you'd simply pay a very high rate for everyone. Your startup company, the one you mentioned, you know that. Other companies, mature companies, people, persons, very high level of interest rates in Brazil, and the idea is to bring all of that down. And the good news is that that's happening.
Well, I'll now open the floor to the press. I'm not sure how many of you are here, but identify yourself and keep the question short. From the press, anybody here? At the back, you, the blue shirt.
Hi, thanks very much for your time. My name is Roberto Barros. I work for Reorg Research. We provide information on distressed debt and bankruptcy. Thanks very much for your time. You talked a lot about measures that are put in place to oil the wheels of the market, and I thought that was quite interesting. I was wondering if you could shed light on the new proposed insolvency procedure, the Lei de Recuperação Judicial in Brazil. Can you tell us what is going to change with this new law, and whether it's been put in Congress and what the status is?
The question is about what's called in Portuguese recuperação judicial. At the end of the day, it's a judicial recovery. What is that? This is a system which works in Brazil today that it's a kind of a Chapter 11 in the U.S. It's not exactly a bankruptcy law, but the previous step until before bankruptcy. The idea is a company is in trouble, is insolvent, it requires judicial recovery. And then there are several rules which are established by the law, and it's got this debt company and that agreement is governed by a judge at the end of the day. Let me mention one or two problems now and what the proposal is, to make it very simple. Today, for instance, one company is under judicial recovery, has a very good asset, and the management wants to sell that asset because it will generate substantial reserves for the company, number one. The workers of the company who are having problems to be paid want that asset to be sold because that would inject cash into the company too. The creditors want that to be done. I am mentioning a case which is very common. The General Assembly of Creditors, which includes the workers and suppliers and banks, everyone, most of them agree, or all of them. Then there is a sale. The buyer wants to acquire. The company, workers, creditors, everyone wants to sell, shareholders, etc. But then a lawyer tells the potential buyer, don't do it. Why? Because there is a potential liability. A potential liability is that everyone agrees, that's good, but in the future, someone can go to court and that company can become responsible for the whole company's debt. And then no one would buy. That's as simple as that. And several other problems like that. For instance, a company under judicial recovery is not able to borrow anymore. And then this new law solves that kind of question. For instance, if workers, creditors, everyone agrees that some asset must be sold, and management, everyone, shareholders, everyone agrees that some asset must be sold, that is, again, guaranteed by the new proposal that the buyer would not be a successor to all the problems. Again, you need to have the agreement of the stakeholders, including workers in that company. And that's one of the proposed measures. Another, for instance, today the company needs new money to recover. And no one would simply lend. Why? Because if the company borrows a new loan, that goes to the end of the line. And no one would lend new money to a company knowing that would get into a judicial recovery to take years to receive it. What the new law proposes, the creditors again, including workers, including suppliers, everyone, if the majority, vast majority, more than 80% agree that the company needs a new loan, that new loan can come and have a priority in the receiving the procedure. Then the question is, why would all the old creditors agree with that? Very simple. New money is going to come into the company. The company is going to recover, really, which today is not happening, and that would enable the company to pay the old debt. That is the kind of change. In summary, it's a very, very long list of improvements. Evidently, that's a proposal that's going to be sent to Congress, that's going to be openly discussed in the Congress, etc. And the idea is to have a better, more workable process and to enable companies to recover from the judicial process. And that's a need, a must in Brazil today. Because of this deep recession, long recession, we have a very large number of companies in judicial recovery. We have to enable those companies to get out, for the workers to get paid, the creditors, the suppliers, everyone, and the company to go back to business. That's the overall idea. But it's a very comprehensive project. We had 40 people, 4-0 working people from the academia, from the law offices, civil servants, congressmen, everyone, every specialist that had experience on that was invited. We had a very good, solid group working. The proposal is a very, very, very good one. Okay, in summary, that is something very important for a very large number of companies being able to recover again and go back to work.
A very last question from the press. Yes,
We actually can do two more.
No, I don't know what.
The time, no, but we have LSCB for
One last question. Yeah.
And press.
Yeah.
And press upstairs. We will have
in the lobby.
The press in the lobby. So if we could give the word to LSCB for before, and then at the BBC we could talk upstairs for the mic.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Rajan Sonia. I'm from the LSE student newspaper, The Beaver. I'd just like to ask, you've been talking about making Brazil more attractive to investors from a fiscal perspective, but do you think that the political climate and recent corruption scandals have contributed to making Brazil less attractive to investors, and how can this element be overcome?
Okay. The idea is the question is whether all those investigations, etc., and problems and the scandals, etc., if this is not preventing foreign investment and foreign direct investment in Brazil, so on and so forth during these days. Let's start with the numbers. Foreign direct investment in Brazil has kept being very strong. We are at a very high level this year compared to the previous year. This is one area which is evolving very well. Investment keeps going. Actually, it's increasing in Brazil. And this is on macro numbers. We have that at Finance Ministry. Central Bank has a very good number for that. They follow it very closely. That is working well. And I am talking to businessmen and investors outside. For instance, I was in New York last week, and it was a very interesting proposition. I met groups of very large corporations and mid-size and some groups with smaller corporations. Companies which have a strong presence already in Brazil, and companies which have no presence whatsoever but are thinking about going to Brazil. What I saw is a strong interest because what companies are, at the end of the day, what they are looking is exactly what we see here in the chart. Level of confidence is going up. That is a result of what is happening with business. The business there. I mean, I could give you several anecdotal opinions that I've heard this company, that company, without mentioning names, company A, B, C, and D. But it's better if you look at the numbers. That is basically published by the Getúlio Vargas Foundation, that many of you know that. Very good, respected, solid group of data that Getúlio Vargas Foundation publishes. That is exactly how that's working. Unemployment rate falling and the perspective growth. The companies which have a strong presence in Brazil, and I had a meeting with, giving one example, not only, but one example of 25 CEOs of very large companies with very large presence in Brazil. But I talked to smaller ones as well, mid-size, etc. It's in general. But taking this group as an example, every one of them was reporting increased sales, increasing demand, confidence in their reforms, and as a result, increased sales, and as a result, increasing investment plans. That's in general. Why? Because the basic reforms are being done. Things are moving, and at the end of the day, I think we are going to come out in a much better country in every aspect, not only because of reform, but because of everything else. Things are moving in Brazil, in spite of the problems, the discussions, and etc., but it's moving to the right direction, I think, in every area. And people are already looking ahead. In summary, the results are being strong so far, and expectations that we have is that it's going even to go better. It's going to improve. Why? Because all the numbers. Companies look at numbers, look at what they're going to do, and I don't have here, but something which would answer your question, a very interesting one. Because here I have more low-frequency data, GDP growth, et cetera, all the low-frequency data, what I'm showing. But I have some also high-frequency data. There is one which is called financial confidence, or financial conditions, better. And that shows the Brazilian risk, measured by CDS, for instance, the country risk, the long end of the interest rate curve, stock market, foreign exchange market, and so on and so forth. All the high-frequency indicators. And it's very interesting. It was not good during the last years. Began to improve mid-last year, began to improve. It was improving until May this year. Then for political problems, etc., it got worse suddenly. There was actually, it was going up, and then financial conditions went down for short period, up again, and the improvement kept the same trend. In summary, what companies are doing is looking at the basic, what is really taking place in the economy, in the environment, in the institutional environment, etc., and not at the specific problems here or there.
Thank you.